Hi, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Toy Harp, a podcast about bluegrass. This is the last episode of season two. Here from Nashville is my conversation with Allison Krauss.
I remember, you know, the first time I looked out in the audience and saw people singing words to our songs that only we had recorded. That was just a really crazy moment. Just never thought it'd end up being there. Never thought we'd hear back from Rounder. Yeah. Never thought we would hear from Rounder in the first place.
If this is your first time listening, you can hear full interviews with Jerry Douglas, Allison Brown, Bela Fleck, Larry Sparks, Jody Stecker, and so many more wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Later on.
Welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. I am Cindy House. I host this podcast. I am delighted to welcome our bestie, everyone's favorite. Please, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Lizzie Noe.
Cindy, that introduction was so beautiful. Thank you for treating me as an honored guest. When I'm more of a prodigal.
Yeah. And that's what we love about you, Lizzie. The biblical times we have together are truly monumentous.
Cindy, what the hell is up? Who are you?
Oh, my goodness. I'm so good. We have lots of exciting episodes. I just wrote up our March newsletter, which has already been sent out by the time this episode will be released. We have a lot of amazing things going on. The podcast coming up, we have this great conversation that you recorded with John Tavius Willis at Foam Fest today. We also have several episodes that we recorded at sea on Kayamo.
No one can see me, but I'm making jazz hands in response to the phrase at sea. I love to be at sea. I'm a nautical girly. I'm an island lad. We had the time of our lives on Kayamo, and I feel like the interviews were like each one was its own little like episode of TV. You know, each one was like so special and different.
Mm-hmm. I want to know what's up with Lizzie Noe right now. But first, I just want to remind people the best way to stay in touch with Basic Folk, to learn about all of the episodes that are coming up and also to learn about how we are thinking and feeling about everything. You can sign up for our newsletter. There's a link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com and sign up there. It's once a month. It'll be worth it. Or you can follow us on social media. We are at Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Basic Folk Pod. We're listener supported. You can make a contribution, basicfolk.com. And again, a link in the show notes for that. Lizzie Noe earlier this year released an incredible album titled Half Seas. I'm told that I say the name of your album incorrectly, so I'm going to try to say it correctly.
No, you don't. Who's telling you that? You're absolutely right. I call it Have Seas because of how I talk, but you can call it Half Seas. It's an F.
I was calling it Have Seas with a V.
I call it Have Seas. Yes, I released Have Seas, and now I'm on the road. I've been on the road what feels like all my life, but it's been about 2 months of nonstop, amazing touring. And you know what's crazy, Cindy? Mm-hmm. A lot of times, like, there are layers to how touring feels. Like, it's my dream, and I get so excited to do it, but then it feels so exhausting and draining. Lately, it's just been feeling like a dream.
Yeah. I love
People
that.
People are being so nice about this record. Like, it's one of those, it's kind of like the first experience in my career where, like, I'll play a song and people are singing along. Mm. And, like, no, I'll say, like, hey, this is Lagunita, and people will get excited. So it truly feels like my childhood dreams are coming true in real time.
Ugh. That has got to feel incredible.
Yep. Choking back tears. It's fine.
On Lizzie's 2 month journey, they recently stopped by Fort Worth, Texas to headline the Fort Worth African American Music Festival, which took place March 16th, and Basic Folk was invited to host a live podcast taping. Lizzie spoke with Jontavious Willis. Lizzie, can you give us like a recap of what it was like to be at the festival and what the festival is?
So when I was a kid, my dad's family used to have these big reunions. They're from North and South Carolina, Baptist family. And it would be like a big barbecue in the state park or like in a church hall. We would have T-shirts made, people of all ages milling around, catching up. Often there would be an elder getting up to say a long prayer or make an announcement. And just this sense of belonging and intergenerational connection, that is what the Fort Worth African American Music Festival felt like. Brandy, the founder, is such a visionary, and they bring together artists of so many different genres, all of which fit under the roots music umbrella. So there's like this beautiful link between all of the music based on the African American storytelling and artistic tradition.
Mm.
It was my first time headlining a festival, so it couldn't have been like more of a special day for me.
Wow. Speaking of Jontavious Willis, Lizzie got a chance to speak with him live on stage, and that's what we're going to hear today. Cue us up for this one, Lizzie, if you will.
Yes. So Jontavious is a blues phenom. And when we talk about the blues, the phrase or the word torchbearer comes up a lot when it comes to young, new blues artists. And I think of that word as a double-edged sword. When you think of a torchbearer, you think about someone who's carrying on a flame that was lit long ago. It's somebody who's carrying on a tradition. But it also can come with restrictions, right? Old heads telling you, you're not doing it right, or asking you, have you really paid your dues? Are you really faithful to the tradition? Mm. Asking you questions about whether or not you belong. And Jontavious handles that double-edged sword with such alacrity. His writing is firmly contemporary at the same time that his playing is rooted in the tradition of country blues. He knows so much about the genre that he's basically in a walking encyclopedia of the blues.
Wow.
I don't want to spoil the surprise, but we played, instead of the lightning round, the traditional basic folk lightning round, we played a pop-up game at the end of the interview where I put different styles of the blues in one cup and different, like, ripped from the headlines 2024 topics in another.
No way.
And we just matched them up. So,
oh my God.
He was so quick on his feet, and it's hilarious. I feel like Jontavious is a great example of a new spin on a genre that a lot of people think they know already.
Mm-hmm.
He is so adamant that the blues is a contemporary genre. And always has been. He made the point during our interview that a lot of the blues artists that we know and love and we've kind of encased in the amber of memory were young teens, 20-somethings, when they wrote their iconic songs. And so it's really a genre for free people, for young people, for people looking ahead. It's not about the past. So my interview with him was so refreshing, and he's so funny. Another point that of his that I thought we could all stand to sit with is that when we talk about country, often we're talking about a musical genre with a certain difficult history. But for him, and I imagine for a lot of other artists, country is a way of life. It's about being from out in the wild. It's about having a connection to nature.
Mm.
It's about sitting with quiet. It's about having time on your hands, and it's about a genuine experience of being connected to a particular place and time. So that was a takeaway that I thought was really, really interesting from our conversation.
Hmm. Speaking of, this is a good song after that. We're going to listen to a clip from Jontavious This is Take Me to the Country, and then we'll get to Lizzie Noh's conversation with Jontavious Willis on Basic Folk.
I've been all around the world, bought everything from diamond to gold. No matter where I go or what I buy, I'm still a country boy in my soul. So take me to the country, nothing but skies and pine. Oh, follow me to the country where we can have a real good time. Well, the folks in the country don't live too fast. Got good mannerism and spectacular class. Take me to the country, nothing but skies and pine.
Jontavious Willis, welcome to Basic Folk. I want to get off to a quick start. I heard a rumor that the blues is dead. Would you care to comment?
Yeah, it's just a rumor. I know a lot of folks from different age groups, different races, but especially a lot of black young folks that's playing the blues. And so it's not going nowhere. And they popping up everywhere. And I think with the help of social media and the help of, it's like a centennial celebration of a lot of the songs that we love that were recorded in the 1924. So, yeah, that's it.
I'm happy to hear that. Let's dig in a little bit more to your life story. Mm-hmm. You're from Greenville, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Small city.
Town, yeah.
It's a small town. What was it like growing up in a small town? And what is the most Georgia thing about you now?
What's the most important thing growing up in a small town? I don't know, family.
Mm-hmm.
And I say the same for the most Georgia thing. Cause my family been in the same spot documented since mm-hmm. 1823. And my great-grandmother's still there. She's 100 years old. My grandfather's still there. Grandmother's still there. And they on the same land they kind of been on for over 100 or so years.
They own their land and, mm-hmm. wow.
Mm-hmm. It ain't a whole
I know heap. That's right.
It ain't a whole heap, but it's like 20-something acres is more than what I got. And so, we grew up, my granddaddy was a farmer. He wasn't 100% farmer, but he worked and he also farmed. And so I used to like going out, getting the corn and taking the corn and shucking the corn and silking the corn and taking out the silkworm, snapping the peas. And I did it because, I liked it. See, my mom and them, they had to do it because they had to. And on. But, I think that's what it is. And it's, southern country living that I really like. We're only an hour from Atlanta, mm-hmm. so if you want to go to sure. the city, you can. But Greenville only like 800-something folks, I like it. It's real family oriented. Yeah.
What was your first guitar?
My first guitar, it was a $99 guitar my daddy gave me because he didn't think I was really gonna play. So it was a $99 combo set where you get the guitar, the amp, the tuner, the CD, and all that stuff.
Oh, like that starter set.
Yeah, I still got it.
Do you ever play it?
Nah. I just sit in the room. But yeah, he gave me that, but because it wasn't too long after that, I got an acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandma lent me some money to my mama paid her back, and I bought an acoustic guitar, and that was it. That's all I wanted to play after that. I might still play electric, but I really love acoustic guitar.
Yeah. You're an acoustic guy. I can relate to that experience too. Like when I told my parents I wanted to play the harp, they were like, "We'll rent one for a couple of months and see." You are famously an autodidact, and your style is like very unique to you. It makes me wonder, how do you introduce rigor and turn into the very accomplished guitar player you are now? How do you go from being a kid who's teaching yourself to where you're at now? Like, what were your strategies for learning guitar, developing your finger style technique? And what kind of environment do you need to learn? How do you set up your room when you need to learn something new?
Well, I think the first thing was I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I feel like you'll never do it if you don't really want to
right.
do it. Cause some people just want to do it for a hobby. I didn't really want to do it for a hobby. I wanted to do it because I really, really, really enjoyed playing music. And I really enjoyed, the blues, man. I started listening to blues now 12 years old. Well, actively, it was always around,
sure.
but like sitting down and just listening to it. I remember I used to go buy CDs. I used mm-hmm. to buy, Ludacris, DMX, Outkast.
I listened to Ludacris. constantly.
Yeah, but yeah, it was good stuff. But I wanted to do it, and so I just found ways to do it. And being in the rural part of Georgia give you time. Anytime you got time to think, you know, it ain't a whole bunch of sound, mm-hmm. not a whole bunch of people. It ain't much to do. So yeah, I just kind of just went with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. What's your practice regimen like now?
I never intentionally practice. I just want, like, if I want to learn a song, mm-hmm. the only way to learn it is to play it, right? So, so I just sit and play, and you know, if some come to me, play. But nothing like hours and hours. It end up being hours and hours,
right? But it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, because I wanted to do it. Yeah, so that's kind of like what mm-hmm. it is now. Now I play pretty regular, so I'm always playing now.
You don't have to warm up if you stay warm.
Yeah, that's the truth.
That's how I feel on the road.
I like it. That's a song. Yeah, it's a nice song.
We'll hit a co-write after the podcast.
I'm with it.
I want to talk about your first album, mm-hmm. Blue Metamorphosis.
Yep.
Ancestor Blues starts the record, and for me it's a standout in terms of the acoustic production. Why was it important to start your very first album with that stripped-down track, just you and the acoustic guitar, and talking about the ancestors?
Well, I feel like it's a lot of, you know, when you're playing older music, a lot of people want to know, like, how do you associate yourself with mm-hmm. this kind of music? And, not just being, I'm from the tradition, I'm from the South, I'm all on and on and on and on and on and on. But I also just wanted to talk about what I felt like is my mm-hmm. politics in music, you know what I'm saying? Because that's the biggest thing I like to talk about, it just how influential the blues is and how it's not slavery music, even if it was a good music, but it's post-slavery music, you know what I'm saying? It's what free people say. It's free people music. So when you listen to it and people think it's old folk music, I mean, it's good for the young and the old, but mm-hmm. these guys were recording when they were 24, 19, 18, 14. You know, like, these are young women and men that recording. And so I thought, you know, why not talk about you know, what I thought was important to me on my first album. And yeah, and I always write I record my own songs, mm-hmm. but I play everybody's songs. So I feel like, you know, there was a topic I felt like I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I have like 60,000 questions in response to that, but we're gonna keep our time. We're gonna respect everyone's time. I do have another question about that song though. There's a line that says, "Nobody taught me how to sing these blues." Mm-hmm. And that's something that I have read that you've said in other interviews. For example, that Taj Mahal helped you dig into the roots, mm-hmm. into your musical roots, mm-hmm. but your style of playing is something that you taught yourself. There's also kind of this ambient feeling that you like referred to where people are really, really interested in the past when it comes to the blues.
Yeah.
So how do you strike that balance between honoring the tradition and bringing your own unique, new, contemporary point of view?
Yeah, I think I go back to that first question too. Like, I kind of wrap everything around like my standpoint. Like at home is like, I honor the past, but I am living in the present. You know, so I'm part of the tradition, but I'm still contemporary, you know. That me and my friend Tuffield, that we always talk about the difference between contemporary and traditional, but it's the same, you know, in a lot of instances, it's the same. And I use those two terms because those are the only two categories for blues and the Grammys is contemporary and traditional. But if you're a part of the tradition, you are traditional, and then if you're living now and playing now, then it's contemporary. So it really don't make much sense. So I don't really try to not, you know, be, because I'm singing music where I'm from, you know, so I'm singing about, you know, the stuff I heard people saying about, and some of the stuff is my experiences too. So it's not like I purposely try to not, you know, I keep the vocabulary is in like the essence of the mm-hmm. music, and then I also bring, I know what's mine, you know, I know, you know, different keys and the different stuff that I haven't heard played anywhere with different licks in the different keys.
Would you be willing to play an example of something where you started from a traditional place and you brought a unique John Tavius lick?
Let me see. Well, I do like it's probably been done before, but I say it in my life.
Yeah.
Okay. probably been done somewhere, but hey, I like it. I like it. I like it. And then it's other stuff in different little keys, like D and B. I got some stuff I play in B, like. Stuff like that, and a lot of it, the three finger picking too, like picking with three fingers, and then you know, so you have your middle finger on your high E mm-hmm. and your index and whatever. But yeah, I feel like I did. You know, then you go back and listen to something that sounds just like it, and you realize you didn't make nothing.
Yeah. Who are some like artists or producers that you feel are like really striking that balance well? Because we all know like. You know, okay, I'm not going to name names, but there's a lot of white people making the blues in a way that's like deeply divorced from the tradition. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like there's like a loyalism that can like be a bit too much. Yeah. Who do you feel like are some other artists who are doing it really, really well, who we should all be listening to?
I just listen to the dead folk. That's sad to say, but it's so true. I only listen to, you know, probably of the old guard. You know, I really enjoy what Taj Mahal did to the blues because he brought some of that old stuff, but he used modern rhythms. And I think we can get lost in trying to show that we can play, you know, this old thing. I think it's a time for that. But, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like that was their modern rhythm. And I think we got different beats and different rhythm that we can, you know, utilize, in, you know, in our guitar playing or even the cadence in our voice. So, yeah, I would say Taj would be, because he's still around, too. Yeah. So I think he would be like somebody that I really like. He would take an old song that just you wouldn't even recognize it and turn it into like a lot of his songs from his first album. He just took a lot of old songs and just made them into like these current things, yeah.
Speaking of Taj and ancestry, you've referred to Taj Mahal as like an elder who feels like a family mm-hmm. member. How has working with Taj Mahal and other heavyweights like Keb Mo taught you about like what type of an elder you want to be when it comes time for you to mentor younger musicians?
Yeah. Well, I've always hung around older people. Mm-hmm. And I always have appreciated the presence of older people, especially the folk that were fun and they were older, but they were young. Like one of my best friends was this dude named Henry Gibson from Bessemer, Alabama. And Mr. Gibson lived to be like 99. He died in 2019. I got to meet him toward like the last 3 years of his life. And when you hang around these folk, they's like the cheat codes to life, you know?
Yeah.
Especially these folk that did everything, they can tell you about everything. So I think being around a lot of those folks just help you with insight, help you with judgment. You know, you still gotta live your own life and do your own thing. But Taj kinda, you know, told me more personal stories. Cause a lot of these stories we get from these white folk that write these books and stuff, but the way they interpret it, it'd be good information. And a lot of this stuff wouldn't be recorded had it not been for them. Because a lot of times we don't appreciate what we have. Like we don't think to record grandma because grandma gonna always be there, right? You know, so, but somebody else see it as like, you know, this unique kind of art form. But
yeah, in a certain way, there's like a level of interpretation and that comes with someone from outside of your community recording what's going on organically inside of it. That's a great point.
So Taj, I got just more spill of like the older guys they hung around with during the revival, and K-Up kind of got me more hip to the business side of it, which is also good, you know, because the blues is an interesting feel for sure.
Yeah. Can I ask you like I want to go a little deeper on that.
Yeah.
I read an interview with you in, I believe it was an Italian blues outlet. And let me just say, guys, I don't endorse this narrative at all. And I found it kind of shocking to read, but also found it really relatable with some of the questions that I've gotten from journalists in the past. That's why we're talking about it. So this journalist said, you're a true enthusiast who plays acoustic blues at a time when many young African-American musicians prefer electric guitar and showmanship. Why not take the easy way out? So your answer was like very nuanced. You started out with, you know, oh, I wouldn't frame it as the easy way out, but here's the choices that I'm making as an artist. And honestly, like my heart broke in that moment because I know what it's like to be out there doing your thing and bringing your original music and then having someone try to compare you to other artists and make assumptions about the Black artist community that just are not true or fair. What I want to know is, like, you are a poppin' musician. You are like a public torchbearer of the blues. What has your relationship with media been like? And how have you managed to maintain boundaries when people are bringing so many expectations that have nothing to do with you? Like, do you ever find it draining trying to assert, like, this is who I am?
Nah, because I feel like when they listen to my music, they know who I am. You know, and I don't try to, you know, everything the way I feel, especially, you know, it's been a while since I did another album, but this next one that I'm going to put out this year, I try to put everything I feel in my music. And then if anything further, I feel like the folks that know me, you know, they know, you know, they know because I talk to them, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, you know, they've been interviewing blues musicians for a while and they kind of know the way, you know, they've been used to it. They aren't used to the new crop of Black folk that've been playing music. So yeah, it don't really bother me much because I don't got some crazy questions. But I just give them crazy. Sometimes I give them crazy answers, but sometimes
like,
I try to.
Can you give an example of a crazy answer?
Oh man, let me see.
That would tickle me.
I got you one. The dude had asked me like, he said, "What is something you looking forward to, you know, they always ask the same question. That's what got me too, when they had the same question. Like, what are you looking forward to in the next 10 years? I like, making money, you know what I'm saying? Like, what do you want me to say? I don't want to change the world either. You know, I think a lot of people got expectation on Black folk too, that just because you're playing blues music that you have to have something to say, because blues is such an old music that it seems like it's just the South and it's uneducated. But no, I play it because I love it. If you don't see me, I'm still at home playing the guitar. Like, I do it because I love it. And any preconceived notion that you got, that's on you, because I graduated college. I make money. I got family. I got a girlfriend. I talk to my mom and daddy. I'm going to raise my kid. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. And I still play the lowdown stanky blue.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then go play it. I don't. It's good press too. Like, all press is good press.
That's true.
You know, and folks gotta, you know, it's you know, even with the crazy questions, it's good that folks still talking about the blues, you know.
Yeah.
And we giving them something to talk about too. I hope I answered the question.
You more than answered the question. Speaking of that wonderful album, what does the phrase or the concept "spectacular class" mean to you?
Well, Caleb actually gave the album a name, because in the song "Country," I just say "spectacular class" in the song.
Yeah.
But other than that, it really went too deep. Nah, this next one's gonna be pretty deep though.
Okay.
Because it's been a while.
Can we have a preview? Can we have a?
Yeah.
Oh hell yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I got you. So like, this is just a solo song that I made though. To be my friend. There was a time I wanted everyone to be my friend. Now only friends I want is Johnny Walker and Big Face Ben. Just like winter
rose in the spring. Just like winter rose in the spring. Well, you keep on waiting and time will bring about a change. Well, I asked the Lord above just to send me a sign. He said we all birthed by Mother Earth and swallowed up by Father Time. My biggest downfall was announcing my defeat aloud. So many crooked faces, I couldn't see who was smirking in the crowd. Some folks got it hard and some folks got it made. But if you living in the shadows, you can never see the shade. Well, a butterfly talking to a dying caterpillar about what it could be. It's just like talking to folks that have never changed me. Whoa, time, it brings about a change. Nothing lasts long when it stays the same.
Oh my God, what a treat. Oh my God, I can't wait for this new album. One thing that I noticed in between Blue Metamorphosis and Spectacular Class is how much you've changed as a vocalist, and like how many additional textures it seems like you have at your disposal. Can you talk a little bit about that journey? And also, like, are there vocal techniques you're excited to share on the new album?
Well, you know, my voice was kind of still not, it went filled out in between, and I think now it's where it's at for now anyway. So yeah, that changed, because when I was younger, I used to sing, you know, all this stuff, all that high stuff. Then when you had puberty, and then like your voice just shot, and it kind of hurt me so bad that I couldn't sing all that. I used to sing like a lot of R&B stuff, but I couldn't sing, and I'm on no way. And so yeah. So the Blue Metamorphosis, I think I put it out actually while I recorded it. I think I was 19.
Stop it.
20, something like that. And then the last one, it may have been that long ago, but I guess it's been 5 years ago. So I, 22.
Yeah, that's a big difference in your voice.
Yeah, so now with this one going to be tough. But I don't have any really technique. Like I said, I grew up in church singing, so I kind of got the technique before I, you know, thought about it really. And listened to all them blues singers too, you know, and they're playing in different keys. You got to sing in different key to play it. So, yeah, I'm not really technical, though. I just try to sing and try to mean it, you know.
It's exciting to be able to, like, watch you grow as a musician in real time by the fact that you started putting albums out so young. As a listener of your music, it's really exciting to watch. There's like so much to look forward to. Yeah. Do you have a title for the new album yet?
It's called West Georgia Blues.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, everybody talk about, you know, different regional styles of blues, but they don't really mean that now, you know, you can play whatever you want to play, but I feel like you play where you're from, you know, and where you're from and what you play. So I'm from West Georgia, so regardless if I'm playing a Delta style or a Piedmont style, I'm still from West Georgia, so it's just a West Georgia blues. But it's also a song called West Georgia Blues on the album. But yeah, that's the album name.
Can we talk about country music? Because you play country blues, and you've played the Grand Ole Opry, which is so dope. Can you talk about like what that experience was like? People call it stepping into the circle. What that means, I guess, is that you're being invited into a community. Mm-hmm. What did that feel like?
I mean, it felt pretty good, and it wasn't no bad pay for two songs either. No, it wasn't. And Marty Stewart, it was his show, you know, and we did, I want to say, two more things together, mm-hmm. and it was
Marty's
even,
awesome.
Even better. Yeah, it was so it was great. So I won't never say nothing about that. It was you know it was good. But I had been to the Ryman though before, but I was with K-Up. I mean, it wasn't the Grand Ole Opry. Oh yeah, those two were different venues. I'm thinking about. I did one thing at the Ryman with Marty, but yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed myself. Yeah. You know.
What role do you feel like the country side of country blues plays in your musicianship and how you see yourself as a performer?
Well, I'm from the country, so when I say think of country, I don't think of music. I think of rural. I think of country, you know, because to me that was country. It's not just a style of music. That's why I think it's called country blues, because it's rural blues. It blues out in the middle of nowhere, you know. So yeah, I think, yeah, that's it. I'm a country man. Mm-hmm. I'm from the country. Like when I leave here tomorrow and go back home, I'll be in the country, in the wood.
Are there places that you've toured that you felt like really lit you up? That like sometimes like you never expect the cities that are going to be really, really great mm-hmm. and really, really welcoming audiences. Have you had experiences like that on tour where you're like, this is so different from where I grew up and yet I feel so at home?
Yeah. Not necessarily at home. I can't never get home nowhere. But I like a lot of places. Switzerland was Bern, Switzerland. I was at the same place for like 5 days. So you got to you'd have to go
actually walk around.
Yeah, walk around and see stuff. You know, so that's and I like Europe. I go to Europe probably about 2 to 4 times a year, and I really appreciate the architecture and the old. You know just how old it is. But I still love home yeah. better than anything. But yes, it's warm. It's warm and welcoming, and I get it a lot of places. I think. The best times I ever had was just hanging out with the elders or hanging out with people after the show or right. my folks after the show, and we just sitting and talking and not trying to be like scholarly and like show, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, a lot of people just be so scholarly yeah. and they know everything when you
they
come
like come
around.
Up to you with a wide look in their eye like, and they're like, have you heard of this person? Have you heard of that person?
Nah, I just like to chill and you know, play a little music, talk a little bit or not talk a little bit, yeah. you know, depending on the day, but I like Bern, Switzerland. If I had your name something off the top, and it's a place, it's a venue like 30 minutes from where I live, mm-hmm. And it's in LaGrange, Georgia, where I was born. I was born in LaGrange because Greenville ain't got no hospital. And I
oh,
was
hell
born
yeah,
at
I'm
the
a
house.
ZZ Top fan.
Yeah. So, like, oh, yeah, no, but this one a little older than LaGrange, Texas, though. Yeah. And it's a nice 120, 130 cap. You know, room, and that's nice, and that is home, so that always yeah. feel good, but
I feel like I notice when I tour, and especially like internationally, sometimes audiences respond to different songs that you weren't expecting. Mm. How do you do you feel like your live set changes when you're playing for like a European crowd versus like a hometown crowd?
Oh yeah.
And do you feel like there are things that don't quite translate? Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
The English don't translate.
Right.
And I already got like a heavy tongue. Like I'm lifting it up for y'all, you know. But so when you get around there, they don't know what you say, but they be so into it, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing why I love it, because I couldn't imagine Americans, at least me, listening to somebody that I don't understand, and it's just one person. I couldn't stay there long. They just sit there and they just be looking and they be into it. That don't translate, but the feeling definitely translates. Yeah. And the set do change, because I won't be worrying about, because I do like a lot of comical stuff, and you can't do that in Europe. You got to just play.
Yeah, the jokes don't land.
You just got to just play, so, yeah.
Terrifying. Okay, I want to talk about Friend Zone Blues, which is maybe my favorite song on Spectacular Class. It's so funny. It's such a good song. It's so relatable. And to me, it is proof that the blues are not stuck in the past.
Yeah.
Like, it can be a vehicle for every contemporary topic on the planet.
Yeah.
What that leads me to is our final sort of segment of the interview, which is a game.
Uh-oh.
Are you down?
I think I'm down.
This is the game.
Okay.
In the cup in my right hand, I have styles of the blues. In my left hand, I have ripped from the headlines topics, very specific to this time and place in 2024. We're gonna pick a topic and we're gonna pick a style, and you're gonna play us a song.
All right, don't judge me, y'all. We did not rehearse this.
Disclaimer, it's meant to be goofy, but it's also gonna be great. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, do you want to pick the first one?
I'd rather pick the topics. I'll let you pick the style.
You can pass on a topic if you like don't care about
it
or know about it.
I'm going to try to go with the first one.
Okay.
Yeah, I can do that.
What's the topic?
Toddlers addicted to iPads and tablets.
And the style is Delta Blues.
Oh, yeah, we can do that.
Okay, so we're about to hear a Jontavious Willis original about toddlers addicted to the iPad in the style of the Delta Blues. Take it away.
Pay attention when your mamas tell you to look. You ought to pay attention when your mama tell you to look. Get your head out the iPad. Maybe you can get your head in them books. How can you write so slow? Oh, but type so fast. How can you write so slow? Yeah, but type so fast.
Talk to me.
Now I understand why you got 3 C's and 5 classes. Oh my. Enough with the timeout. My mama never did do that. I said enough with the timeout. My mom and daddy never did that. She just get a cherry switch, and I bet the next time you show know how to act. And you won't be on the iPad no more then. That was goofy.
It's an instant classic. Are you down to do one more?
Thank you.
So do you want to do one more?
I do one more. Oh, yeah. All right.
That was incredible.
Hey, y'all, if we go down from here, just know.
That was amazing.
You want to switch it up this time?
Yeah.
I do styles and you do topics.
Okay, great.
All right. What you got? That's the most important one right there.
Mm-hmm. I have Starbucks workers forming a union. Have you heard about that?
I don't think I'm educated to actually make a lot of things on that. Piedmont.
Okay, I have the Ozempic trend where people
are
taking diabetes.
Oh, yeah, I can talk about that one.
In case you guys aren't familiar, celebrities are taking diabetes medicine to lose weight, and now there's a shortage of it for actual diabetics.
Yeah, I would have did the Starbucks working for you, but I'm not as informed.
It's actually it's a very technical and involved
historical
moment.
Yeah, yeah, see, I would have to
moment.
Be like in it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, what's the style?
Piedmont.
Let's go.
All right.
The Ozempic shortage and in the style of Piedmont blues.
Get more guitar, is that possible?
Oh yeah. Thank you, Ty.
We sure have to speak. Oh, me and my doctor, we sure have to speak. I gotta lose 20 pounds and I need to lose it before next week. I haven't been one of those folks to do everything what other people do. I ain't one of them folks that do things what other folks do. I hear the celebrities taking a jab. Lil Johnny might take one too.
I just play.
My mama diabetic. She gotta stash herself. Say my mama diabetic type 2. She gotta stash for herself. If I can get that before time, then I won't need no gym help. Lord, I won't even have to work out. They said all I got to do is just stab my belly and I keep on eating my sausage biscuit with a little bit of jelly. Yeah, I done found out for myself. I'm going do it right now, and then I'm gone myself.
All right.
Octavius Willis, you have been the most amazing guest. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You are playing your own music on this stage after this, is that correct?
Yeah, well, some of my music and some other folk music, but we're gonna get down.
Everybody stay right where you are. I mean, maybe get a drink, but stay right where you are. What a star. Thank you so much, Johntavious.
Thank you.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by C.J. Nungesser. Our music composed by Alex Stanton. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there. You can check us out on FolkAlley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM mobile app. You can find us wherever you get podcasts or at BasicFolk.com. Special shout out to Bruce Warren and our friends at WXPN in Philadelphia for letting Lizzie use their studios to record this intro and outroduction. Thanks, guys.
Listen, I'm going to be real with you. You need to give this episode to your dad, okay? Send this to a dad in your life, a father figure, someone who takes care of others. That person needs to hear this conversation with Johntavious Willis. This conversation with Johntavious Willis. And if you have a few dollars to spare, please go online and search Abortion Care Tennessee. We are currently in fund-a-thon with the National Network of Abortion Funds. Abortion funds all across America need funding to get health care to people who need it the most, many of whom are traveling out of state for care. So if you search Abortion Care Tennessee, between now and May, your donation will be doubled. We are in the matching period of fund-a-thon. Abortion forever, no matter what.
Hell yeah. Thanks, Lizzie. Guess what? We'll talk to you next time, and we love you. Bye.
Bye.